Let's Face the Issues is a daily broadcast ministry of First Conservative Baptist Church with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood. Dr. Youngblood is also the founder, president of Conservative Theological University. Let's Face the Issues broadcast deals with real issues facing our culture today from a biblical perspective. God created three institutions, the home, government, and the church. Therefore, any issue that is harmful or has a negative impact on either of these institutions will be carefully dealt with and confronted from a biblical worldview. Too often, good people are afraid to confront serious issues that are attacking the church, the home, and Christians. We must stand against the enemies of the family and the church. Tune in each day for another broadcast of Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood. Here is Dr. Youngblood with Let's Face the Issues.
Thank you so much, ladies and gentlemen, for joining us today. This is Dr. Youngblood. You're tuned in to another broadcast of Let's Face the Issues. We're looking forward to having you join in the dialogue and discussion today. So let me remind you that you can do that by dialing 401-1413, 904-401-1413, get you directly through to the studios and right to our microphones so that we can have discussion today. In just a moment, we're going to introduce our guest, and I pray that you'll be tuned in, listening, and be interested in asking questions or joining in with the dialogue and the discussion. But let me remind you, ladies and gentlemen, as we face the issues, we do so based on the authority of Scripture. You see, there are a lot of folks today that have the misunderstanding, misguided direction, that if you're a Christian, that if you're a pastor, if you're a church, you ought not to be involved in political issues. They're just simply wrong biblically. God created the home, and God created government, and God created the church, and He did so in that order. And so therefore, anything that affects the home or the church or anything in the political arena, it is the Christian's responsibility to be salt and light. Jesus commanded that we're to be salt and light. Salt means we get out into the society and the decay of society, and we become a healing force in the decaying society. And as light, we're in a darkened world, and we're to bring about illumination. And Jesus said that as He was speaking to His disciples, if you continue in My word, then you're My disciples indeed, and you shall know the truth. The truth shall make you free. And then Jesus said in John 17:17, Thy word is truth. And so, ladies and gentlemen, it's the word of God that is the truth that we are to be, that we're to use as our guide and the lamp under our feet, and the pathway should be illumined by the word of God. And so as we think about the issues that we're faced with, let me remind us that when it comes to the political arena, God charges every one of us with the responsibility of praying for those that are elected leaders over us. In fact, in 1 Timothy, the 2nd chapter, verse 1 and 2, it reminds us to pray for all of those that are in leadership. And then it has the little caveat, so that you might live a quiet and peaceable life, indicative of the fact that if we do not pray for and vote for and elect those that are the conservative leaders, that we're not going to have a quiet and peaceable life as Christians. And so may I remind us, we've just gone through a major, major battle on a nationwide basis in the election process. And I'm astounded by the fact that, for example, just down in South Florida with the, Brenda Snipes, the one that been in charge of the elections there for 15 years, and all of a sudden ballots kept appearing and appearing. A whole case of them wound up in the back of an Avis rental car at the airport, and they kept doing the counting and the recounting, and each time more ballots would appear. And then when Governor Scott has removed her, she had already said that she was resigning and would retire as of January the 3rd, but then she decided after he officially removed her immediately that she withdrew, rescinded her retirement, her resignation, and now she's going to battle the state of Florida for her seat. Ladies and gentlemen, that's the problem that we have in the election system in America. We have spoiled and decayed what is supposed to be a quality election process in America. In the state of California, for example, we had 14 Republican seats, seven of which were removed after 3 weeks of counting ballots. They do what they call harvesting of ballots. And the state of California is the only state that allows that illegal process to take place. That means you can go door to door, house to house. You can go out to the graveyard and you can go out to the streets and find the homeless and the dead. And you get them signed up to vote. And then anybody can bring those ballots in and turn them into the elections commission. And they're counted as the official ballots. It's illegal across America to do that. But yet that's done in the state of California, because in California, as I say, on the left coast, the home of the fruits and nuts, anything is possible. But that's what we're seeing taking place in the denigration, the deterioration of our election process. But ladies and gentlemen, the national election is over. But we're on the very cusp now. We're entering into, and I realize that we're in the Christmas season. And by the way, Merry Christmas to everyone listening. I pray that God will bless you during this Christmas season. But ladies and gentlemen, we still have some real issues in not just in the state of Florida, but also here in the city of Jacksonville. Jacksonville is a great city. It's been my home for some almost 40 years now, and I'm thankful to be here. But ladies and gentlemen, we have some major, major problems that we need to address in the city of Jacksonville. During the course of the election that is before us, the primary will be March of 2019, the general election in May of 2019. And although that might sound a long way off, that's just around the corner. It's just, if you please, a few days before us. And ladies and gentlemen, I'm delighted to have in our studios today and at the microphones with us, Jimmy Hill. Jimmy is a Republican candidate running for the mayor of the city of Jacksonville, the mayor's office. And ladies and gentlemen, I believe if there's ever a time in our city that we need quality, qualified conservative candidates to take a stand and to come up to the home plate and start the batting process, I believe it's now. Jimmy, we're delighted to have you with us today on Let's Face the Issues.
I'm extremely pleased to be here. Thank you so much for having me in this morning, and I look forward to chatting and talking about a lot of big issues.
Amen. I say, Jimmy, maybe I should just be proactive and say, Mr. Mayor.
But, not yet. Let's earn it. I got to earn it first. But I think
let's go through the vote first, not just the ballot harvesting.
Absolutely. We got a lot of work to do, and I think we're going to get there.
Absolutely. I am delighted that you're here. Would you simply take a moment, Jimmy, and introduce yourself to our listeners? Tell us a little brief sketch of your background, your credentials, what you're doing, why you're doing it. And the most important thing I think that our listeners need to hear today is, why are you running?
Absolutely.
Because when you run for office, and I've had out of my four sons, I've had two of them to be involved in the political process and run for elected office on a citywide or statewide basis. And it is a battling process. It is a process where you can get bruises pretty easily. But tell us your passion, who you are, why you're running. What is your passion for running for this office?
Absolutely. I'm delighted to do it. I'm a lifelong resident. I ironically was not born in Jacksonville, because my father had deployed from Jacksonville to Morocco, Africa. So I can't say born and raised, because I was literally born in Africa. We didn't stay but about a year. But fifth generation Jacksonville family on my mom's side. Grew up in Arlington, and grew up in an absolute perfect environment to grow up in. We had the best of nothing and the worst of nothing, and we never wanted for anything. Arlington was, and I think still is, a neighborhood that brought up just so many really quality kids, because it was such a unique place, and I think it still can be and should be and still is in some areas. So I went straight from high school into the fire service. I was a public servant for 28 years, but that entire time I had a business. I'd run a business. I did large crowd events. I did the boat show down at Metro Park. We had a long-standing business for 21 years. We ran a nice business. I somewhere along that way, actually kind of early on in the boat show, I got married to my beautiful wife. We now have two teenage boys. I am a son of Jacksonville in every way. I've studied the politics of Jacksonville because, ironically, through the fire service, I was on one of the beach fire departments. So we were very politically involved, just because we had to be to stay alive down there. And I got involved in the process and started watching the meetings. Then I started going to Jacksonville's meetings, because they started interlocking each other. And so I ran for office eventually. At the end of my fire department career, I ran for a city commission seat down in Atlantic Beach. And it was a great process. It It allowed me to use a lifetime of experience in business and the common sense of being on the fire department, which was, you know, not normally a good combination, but the business side of it worked out really well. And it uniquely positioned me to where I am today. I've worked in every neighborhood in Jacksonville. As a younger man, I worked a lot of different jobs. I would drive ambulances and work with my dad. I've been under most of the houses in Springfield as a plumber's assistant. So I've got a kind of a vast background in what Jacksonville really is. And that's just a solid place to grow up and to be have a family. The quality of life here is amazing. And the reason I'm kind of engaged in the process is I've watched corruption dip in and out and dip in and out and dip in and out of our politics blatantly. And to my knowledge, I don't think I've ever seen the audacity that we see currently in the political process with just the straight up corruption. It's there's favoritism, there's picking and choosing of winners and losers.
What you call good old boys club.
It is. And it's the worst I've ever seen, because it used to just be a handful of people, and now it's just whoever has the most money has the favor. You can be from out of town and have the money and gain the favor. When you do something like offer Amazon 200 acres for free without really and we all know that was kind of a interesting offer, but when you offer them 200 acres and a seat at the table for social change, you're making big mistakes for a community. You shouldn't be sculpting the culture through that type of thing. So Jacksonville is a beautiful place. It's a unique place. I always tell people the way you know Jacksonville is amazing is you get a lot of these NFL players and you get a lot of these Navy officers who come through here for a short stint and end up moving here for their forever home. It's a place worth keeping. Right now, it's a place in great turmoil, especially in City Hall, and we're being divided into groups and fractured into groups by special interests. We have people taking down monuments. We have so much stuff going on that's divisive. I want to come to the table and bring a unique method of bringing people together. Our slogan's Duval for All, not because it's Duval is cool. It was that before they started hollering at some football game that they go to. It is a it is a community that really can embrace everybody without dividing us. And these people that are using political wedges to divide this community are doing us no service.
Jimmy, you just mentioned and you touched on the fact that with Amazon, what happens when you do that, the city government becomes the power broker to make the determination for winners and losers.
Absolutely.
I've said for years and years and years that I feel it is disingenuous and contrary to our city charter, by the way, for government to be involved in setting up business, funding business. In fact, most of the business community in the city of Jacksonville, as across the United States of America, is made up of small business, not your huge, huge conglomerate, the Bezos organization and Amazon, that basically controls governments and controls cities. I'm against that, and I'm glad to hear you say that. There's a thought that comes to mind. Recently, a group of parents, Jimmy and the city, filed suit against the city, and particularly with the school board, because they are against having armed security in our schools. I don't know if you read that article or if you're familiar with the organizational group that's been formed there for that. What do you see as the problem with that?
So it's funny. I just mentioned we have two teenage boys. So I've been engaged in the school board process. I've gone to some of the meetings. We've been real involved at school. One thing I'll tell you right away is if you're going to have three or four armed guards at a school board meeting, I think you probably should have at least a handful of armed guards at every school.
I agree with that.
I was shocked by the level of security that they recognize that they need at school board, knowing today's environment. I am a absolute advocate of the Second Amendment. I think it's one of the more brilliant pieces of legislation or actually language in our founding papers. Because it serves a lot of purpose for other things. I think it actually, the holding off of tyranny is the obvious big thing. But if you can defend yourself, your world becomes a lot more safe. And a child can't. A child can't carry a gun. But they shouldn't be sent to a place where no one that's advocating for them can either. in a world where you have the media and you have people sensationalizing these things and making heroes out of crazy people that are shooting up places by covering them and giving them a name and making the next nut that wants to come shoot someplace up, putting attention on them and giving them a platform. So
especially when we have the responsibility to protect those kids.
Absolutely. And there's no way to do it. There's no other mechanism to do it. And it's just – it's insane to talk about removing that layer of protection when – you expect no more for your money. There's an armed guard at your bank, but you wouldn't guard your child. It makes no sense. But you have to realize these are the same people that don't really value a child's life before it's born. So why would they care about a child after it's
born?
You
touched on the thing that's the very heart of the issue. In fact, some of these, I call them bleeding heart parents that get all upset and uptight when they see anybody with a weapon, that somehow, some way that weapon is evil. And it's not the weapon that kills. It's the evil heart that kills. But we have across America today a real need to harden our schools. There needs to be the bulletproof glass, I believe, at the doors. There needs to be security guards at the doors. I believe that there needs to be some way to protect the school to prevent kids from going in with weapons. And I'm in full agreement with that. But, Jimmy,
it's tragic that we have to, but
yes,
we have no choice.
Absolutely.
We have no choice at this point.
We're in that era in society. We're in that day when we have no choice. You're exactly right. June of this year, and I've not heard a major hoopla, as I call it, about it, but in June of this year, Channel 4 News issued a report that said that Jacksonville was the murder capital of the state of Florida.
Right.
I happen to disagree with their philosophy. Of course, Channel 4 is less than conservative, so I can understand their mindset. But what do you say is the need? Let's just back up. Out of your candidacy for mayor, what are the three major things that you think needs to be accomplished in the city of Jacksonville? And would you say that crime is one of them? And how would you tackle that issue?
Let me tackle crime specifically, and maybe we'll duck back to the other two, because crime's one that it's one of the few areas that my really strong emphasis on limited government is going to get some serious pushback internally from me. So I'll tell a quick story. So I have two children, and we're that house. Everybody knows that house where all the kids gather. And we live in a neighborhood that's – it's not super affluent, but it's – we have a good mix of kids from different neighborhoods, different demographics, you know, economically. They're all good kids, but they're all exposed within a mile or two to some drug activity, some gang activity, minimal gang activity. They come to our house and they gather around a fire pit in our backyard, and they gather there for two reasons. One, there's milk there, and apparently these kids don't get any milk because we're buying 20 gallons of milk a week. But just kidding, that's not true. But we give them a Pop-Tart or milk or whatever. But two, these kids are starving for camaraderie. They're starving for mentorship. All kids are starving for love. They're starving to death for something in the street. They're getting it from gangs. And they're not getting it in their home. And we could go into the problem with the family, and we could try and solve
the
issues with the family,
yes,
because that's the root of all of it. There's no question in my mind that that's the root of all of it. And ironically, it's something that society has created through a welfare system that encourages the father to leave. And everyone's recognizing it. Ironically, the left is actually having to address that issue. But let's talk about how we fix it. So we can't go plant dads back in homes right away, but we can make that our goal long term to make sure that that happens. But right away, we have a whole generation of kids growing up with no mentorship. And there's different organizations that try and do it. But what we found is this concept of a fire pit is incredibly powerful. It's a place. It has a certain ambiance to it that kids love. It is a place you can secure the environment around it fairly well. It's warmth. It provides light, which is kind of the focus of the whole thing. So I've got this concept of a fire pit as a community center focal point for teenage kids. And this is something I would spend money on. This is one of those things that it is the biggest problem. It's the most threat to, you know, citizens walking around is crime and the potential of being a victim of a crime because of the result of lack of parenting leaves us with a giant void in our society. So some type of a program, and there are other people do it, and the churches do it to a certain extent through youth groups. And so I think we just really focus on at-risk kids. I think that's the key. And we do it through tangible places in the communities where they need it most. And then I had a neat conversation with a veteran the other day. We have a ton of veterans here who are often without family here, and they're good mentors, and we maybe give them a place to do some good community work. We used to host a bunch of really squared away Navy guys at the fire station because they were bored and looking for something to do. Maybe we let them save some kids' lives and let them interact and provide mentorship for some at-risk kids. So
the key to it is, as I understand your dialogue on that, is to reach them before they become the criminals.
We have to provide something for them to move towards other than gangs. We have to give them a direction.
Ladies and gentlemen, you're tuned in to Let's Face the Issues. This is Dr. Youngblood. You can dial 401-1413, 904-401-1413. If you have any questions or comments, we're interviewing today Jimmy Hill, which is a Republican candidate, conservative Republican candidate, for the mayor of the city of Jacksonville. Primary election in March, the general election next May. Jimmy, I believe we'll wind up with about three candidates in this race.
Right.
Of course, the mayor that's presently seated, and yourself, and then the former president of the city council, Brochet. But I'm looking forward to seeing God give wisdom as you run this race. Jimmy, there's one of the things that I have a great consternation over, and that is in the study of the city charter. I find in the city charter nothing, zip, zero, nada, where gives us the authority to spend the taxpayers' money in the manner in which we do. For example, I believe the last count, we had about a $430 million budget. And out of the $430 million budget, and that's round figures, it's probably more than that, but it's about $430 billion budget. And yet we are spending some $37 million for what's called the Children's Commission. Now, with what you just stated about the need to reach these kids on the street before they become the criminals, yet with the Children's Commission, and now there's been a merger between the Children's Commission and the Jacksonville Journey by the mayor, and they had worked on that for about 6 or 8 months, and it's just been finalized. This is the article says, Mayor Curry announces the consolidation of the Children's Commission and Jacksonville Journey. Jimmy, I don't know if you're aware of it or not, but with the Children's Commission, I've said for years and years and years, because I hammered on this with two or three different city councils over the years, the Children's Commission historically have kept about two or three sets of books.
Right.
They have the funds coming in about $30 to $37 million a year from the city. They have $2 or $3 million from the state,
yep.
$2 or $3 million from the feds. And the last count I had, they had 11 full-time staff members, the lowest one making about $119,000, the highest one $179,000. You got to believe it was 2010. I don't know the number since. 2010, I think they helped 51 kids.
Right.
So how do we justify that with the city charter not allowing that to take place, and yet we're doing so? Is that a wise way to expend our money? Is that a wise way to invest the city taxpayers' dollars? What would you do? How would you respond? Are you in favor of seeing the Children's Commission being now amalgamated with the Jacksonville Journey, in which the Jacksonville Journey was set up simply as a deep pocket coming out of city budgets to help the good old boys club? What are your responses to that?
So the obvious problem there is no oversight whatsoever. Clearly, if you're only reaching, let's double it and say it's 100 kids, for the numbers aren't working at all. There's something drastically wrong. It makes me, it makes me really think that it's something along the lines of some of the other corruption issues that our council had. I mean, that money's going somewhere. What's it doing? Where's it going? Who's getting it? I think what you probably have to do is take existing structure, and I'll be honest with you, the Children's Commission may be a tool that can be molded into something useful, but those numbers aren't that strong. We'll have to, we have to take a hard look at that.
If I can interrupt,
yeah,
Jimmy.
Absolutely.
Right now, with the new amalgamation of the two, the Jacksonville Journey and the Children's Commission, it will have board members. I think there's something like either 7 or 9 board members, all to be appointed by Mayor Curry.
Right. And that's happening. You'll notice one thing in this administration. So the appointment of boards is a complete political exercise to gain political collateral for the future. And that's what's happening everywhere. And it's a shame that you would use an issue like children's issues to start building collateral for political aspirations. And board appointments are the classic place that happens. And name any board in Jacksonville, and you're going to find that it is not set for what it was intended. JEA board, just as controversial as that is, that's the most public, most scrutinized And the audacity of the appointments made shocks everybody in the community. And yet they still do it and don't blink. They don't look back and they don't care what we think.
It's so, repaying for the good old boys club.
It is. I say good old boy. And I think there's some new players in there. I think we've injected a whole nother layer of players that are maybe not the original good old boys, but the new good old boys.
Yes, new good old boys, if we can call it that. I believe we have a caller on the line. Go over the question or comment, please.
Yes, good morning. I want to caveat what I have to say. I've only known Mr. Hill for a very brief period of time. My following comments are not were not requested by him or anyone else. This is what I believe. And then what I believe is this man is uniquely positioned, as he said in the beginning, to solve some tremendous problems that we have here in Jacksonville. For over 10 years, I fought a particular matter that has cost the city $300 million a year and 2,000 jobs, a matter that I am uniquely professionally able to assess, that this city, through corruption, possibly criminal, if not just ethical corruption, has prevented from happening because, as the word is, a lot of good old boys didn't want it to happen for some reason. This man, Mr. Hill, I would consider the consummate everyday Joe. You know, he's got what I call God's divine sufficiency. He said that in the beginning. He doesn't have anything of what he doesn't need, but he's got sufficiency in what he does. That's Proverbs 30, verses 7 through 9. He is a man of integrity and honesty. And his background will enable us to do the single most important thing that must be done in Jacksonville, and that's to crack open this rotten egg of good old boy, self-preserving, self-interest type of activity. It is there. I've run up against it. I saw it in the HRO, and I've seen it in this other matter that I alluded to that's costing the city $300 million a year. Selfish people, and another layer certainly has been added, particularly with Shad Khan, has got to be dealt with. And if we can close around this man with some principled, strong male leadership, we may be able to get rid of this rotten egg. Thank you, Mr. Hill, for running. Thank you, Pastor, for putting him on the air this morning. That's my comment.
Great. Thank you so much for your call and for your comments. A good statement being made there in relationship to what we find with corruption taking place. Part of that corruption, Jimmy, if I can address it, is the attempt to sell JEA. I believe it was totally based on, again, the good old boys networking. Tell our listeners where you stand. Are you for or against the sale of JEA and why?
So, two layers of that answer. I'm absolutely adamantly opposed to it. And I've had to convince a couple of fundamental, you know, limited government conservatives as to why electricity has changed dramatically in the way that it affects our society. So, if you, which I have on several occasions, deploy post hurricane anywhere that has power down in an urban setting, you cannot put enough law enforcement into that community to provide security. You have to have electricity back before you have any real security. If we go into a system where we are basically another customer in a long line of customers and we get a coastal raking storm, and that happens, that's basically our typical storm setup, is you get Cocoa, Melbourne, and Jacksonville tied into, and Daytona tied into a power outage situation, where will we be on the pecking order of getting our power put back? Right now, we have autonomy. This JEA can come back and put that power in place faster than anybody else. And I have got to give them credit and perps. They not only put our power back, then they deployed to Puerto Rico and put their power back. Our JEA put more people on the ground than most utilities over there. And because they're good at it. And I like them being good at it. And I like having my electricity on. It's one of those things where we don't pay an exorbitant amount. It's not terribly expensive to have this privilege of being able to put it back. But what's happening with the JEA is insidious. It's not about what I just said. It's about political clout. It's about loading a board and selling something and taking the remnants of that and exploiting that for political gain in the future.
Yes.
It's about buying, I call it like gumballs to hand out in the community. You'll take the $2 or $3 billion that they were, and they're saying $2 billion. The thing's worth $6 billion. The fact that they would not sell it for a proper price is the first huge alarm. It's a really big indicator there's a problem. The JEA is one of the largest most actually, I'll say it like this. If the attorney general doesn't look into the JEA situation with deep eyes, then I'm missing something, because I see that just the two numbers being so far off makes it not copacetic for me. I just can't imagine how we would sell something of that value. Plus the fact that we've closed a plant that had 20 years of life on it, and we blew it up as fast as we possibly could as a community and got it off the plate as fast as we possibly could to get it out of sight while it still had 20 years of life in it. If the citizens really figured out that they just blew up and tore down something of that value, just like the overpass at the Hart Expressway, they're tearing up infrastructure and giving it away for personal and political gain. It's insidious. It's actually terrible, and we need to put an end to it.
Yes. We've got about a minute left in this broadcast. Let me get you to take a moment, Jim, if you would. Let our listeners know how they can reach you, what they can do to help in this campaign.
So we absolutely need one thing today and tomorrow. We need petitions signed. Anybody that would like to see us at least get in there and stir this up and make a good run at it, we'd like to qualify by petition. You can go to our website at jimmyhillforjacksonville.com. The petition's right on the top bar. That's the number one thing you can do. And you can also just sign up in there. If you get the petition to us, we'll track your data right there on the petition. You can check that you want to get involved. We'll basically grab your data and get back with you and get you engaged in the process. This is a campaign that's so grassroots. It's gonna take a miracle, and I'll be honest with you, getting this far and being where we're at is a miracle. We're excited about it. We know we're doing something different. We know we're taking a different approach. We need petitions really bad. We need them this week. We have to have them by Monday.
Give them that website again.
JimmyHillForJacksonville.com.
JimmyHillForJacksonville.com.
Yep.
And ladies and gentlemen, we've been talking with Jimmy Hill, the Republican candidate for the mayor of the city of Jacksonville. I pray that you will be praying for him, that God will bless and use it. Jimmy, our time has gotten away so rapidly, we need to do this again.
Let's do it.
Looking forward to it. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us. Looking forward to meeting you on the air, even tomorrow, as once again, we face the issues.
You have been listening to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood, pastor of First Conservative Baptist Church and president of Conservative Theological University, 12021 Old St. Augustine Road, Jacksonville, Florida, located just 1 mile south of I-295. You are invited to worship with them 9:30 a.m. Sunday for Bible study, 10:45 a.m. Sunday morning worship service, 7 p.m. Sunday evening worship service, or 7 p.m. Wednesday fellowship meal Bible study. Prayer, Bible Q&A, and updates on issues facing our city, state, and country. Tune in again for another Let's Face the Issues broadcast. Also tune in the same station Saturday mornings at 9 for expository Bible preaching by Dr. Youngblood. Remember, a rebroadcast of this program can be heard every evening, 9 p.m. on AM 1600 and 100.3 FM. Tune in and invite others to listen.